Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Good morning, Portland, Oregon, and the Great Northwest. Welcome to Investing Simplified, the longest-running financial show on the air that takes your questions for free, no cost. You can pick up the phone, give us a call. And I got to tell you, today we have a guest on our show. And first, I'm going to introduce my co-host, Kevin Stege with the Baker Coastal CPA firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
Morning, Kevin. And Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning, gentlemen.
And, you know, we're going to get into it because we got our special guest. And I'm going to just give a little introduction to him before we get him on the air. But we have Rodney Johnson, who is the senior editor of Dent Research. He's also an author. He wrote a book called Irrational Economics. And if you really want to know how irrational our economics are in this country, pick up that book. It is a great read, and I highly recommend it. Rodney is also co-editor with Harry Dent Jr., the economist, and they write economy and market newsletter that is a free newsletter. You can sign up on our website, or you can go to dent.com and also sign up for that. But with all that, Rodney, are you there?
Yes, I am, Chuck.
Good.
Did I
do that introduction okay there for you?
I thought it was fabulous. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we're really elated and happy to have you, especially since I know Dent Research right now is you guys are all into full 100% mode planning for your Irrational Economic Summit up in Vancouver, B.C.
Boy, we are. And there's so much going on in the economy, both here and around the world. There's going to be a lot to talk about.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about that today. I got to tell you, I really enjoyed your most recent article about the student debt solution. And one of the things I tell all my clients when my clients talk about government or they say, you know, that we have this and we have that for free, I tell them, look, there is nothing the government spends that is free. These college loans are not free. We the taxpayers are going to pay for them.
Absolutely. And then the bill is going to get bigger and bigger, and people act as if it just isn't going to come due, that some magic thing is going to happen. And what's instead going to occur, instead of just disappearing, these student loans are going to be added on to the national debt, which is not where they're supposed to be.
Well, you know, Rodney, I'm going to ask you a question because I was going to ask Harry if we had him this week, but having you is great. I was going to ask you guys, look, how far... Now, I know that we are the best of the worst. We're only about 105, 106% of debt to GDP, where the rest of the world is over 200% debt to their GDP. So we're the best of the worst. But at what point down the road does this thing actually blow?
Well, and you know, Chuck, that's an interesting question because of the way it is measured. It's really hard to get a handle on it. I mean, we're at about 105% debt to GDP, but the Federal Reserve owns, you know, roughly $4 trillion. So is that counted or not? And so you have to start taking away those chunks that we say we kind of owe to ourselves. And then you have to look at it and say, well, before we blow, before we have a meltdown in our debt and our monetary issue, you're going to see other people really fall off first. And it's going to be the weak players first, people like Greece, people like Spain, Japan at 230% debt to GDP. And so I don't know when we're going to make that happen, but I know we're not going to be the first person to get shot in the head over this.
Well, you know, Japan, and I'll give a little kudos to Harry, because Harry was the first guy I remember ever saying this back in the early 90s, late 80s, that Japan was going to go into a terrible recession and a collapse of their market, and everybody thought he was crazy. And now they've been in a 20-year, basically a 20-year recession.
Absolutely, and they got out of it recently just a little bit. But what they had to do, I mean, they devalued their currency from 75 yen to the dollar to 125. I mean, it was just a dramatic drop in the purchasing power of their currency, which helps their corporations, which sell to the world, they export. But it, of course, is terrible to the consumers because they can buy so much less. And even with that incredible devaluation, their GDP growth has been 1%, maybe 1.5%. And so it really hasn't helped a whole lot.
Well, you know, and speaking about Japan, we're just going to move a little bit north and westerly and talk about China. What is China doing?
Chuck, I don't know what we do with China.
Yeah. I mean, that is like the 800-pound gorilla in the room, isn't it?
It really is. And I assume most people listening know that China devalued their currency last week. But you got to look at it in the bigger context. The Chinese have pegged their currency to the U.S. dollar for more than 20 years, and they allow it to move in a band, but it really does have a peg. And so over the last 3 years, as the dollar has gotten stronger and stronger, it means that by default, the Chinese currency has gotten stronger and stronger compared to the euro and the yen and the South Korean won and the Taiwanese dollar and the Singapore dollar. And so all of their export destinations, except for the United States, have gotten worse because their currency is more expensive. And so the Chinese, with a slowing economy, which we all know to be true, have been watching as their exports got more and more expensive everywhere but the U.S. And so the fact that they devalued is not a surprise at all. The question is, how far does it go? And that's what we don't know. They let it drop by 4.5%. It's come back in a little bit. I know 4.5% doesn't sound like a lot, but in currency terms, that's a huge move. But what it now does is it puts their other partners, it puts Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, all these people in a quandary, because do they devalue because the Chinese did? Because, of course, they don't want to lose any market share. And it has that uneasy feeling of the beginning of a currency war. And that would be a huge, huge problem around the world.
Well, Rodney, on some collateral damage from what's happening in China here, and this question was originally for Harry. I thought he was coming on, and it was based on his article, but I know it's right up your wheelhouse also. But related to some of the Chinese money that's coming out of China and investing in real estate around the world, and some of the bubble that's creating. In Harry's article, he made a statement that just really struck a chord with me, because I saw this here in Portland about 8 or so years ago when I was looking for housing. And he made the comment that he said, when real estate gets so expensive that even hardworking upper middle class residents can't afford to live there. I mean, how crazy is that?
And that's really the problem in the big city centers. I mean, San Francisco is in a class by itself because of the tech bubble. But outside of San Francisco, you look at L.A., you look up in, of course, Seattle, and over on the other coast, and New York, and down in Miami, and Washington, D.C., these areas that are attracting large amounts of foreign dollars, particularly from the Chinese along the western coast, what do you do when the people who are living and working there every day can't afford to be there anymore? And this is a big struggle, because what's going to occur is eventually the money flows out of China are going to slow down. They must. And particularly with what's going on in their economy kind of retrenching, the people who have the wealth are now having to put the money back into their businesses because they're not making what they did before. And so it's going to be a big problem as you see real estate start to fall off because it loses that bid from the international market. And the local people say, you know what? 10% down doesn't help me. 20% down doesn't help me. I need 30-40% down before I can afford anything here.
That's right. And I think I think Vancouver, BC, where you're having your summit here next month, is also another city that's being hit the same way.
You know,
oh, I think it's the poster's out for the world. I mean, certainly it's one of the most overpriced places on the planet right now.
Well, Rodney, one of the things that I'd like to follow up on the real estate thing we've seen, you know, some great increases in pricing here in the Northwest anyway, which just is reminiscent of the last time around. But one of the things there's also seems to be quite a lot of building of rental properties, apartments and that sort of thing. And the rents are going up amazingly. Where do we end up with, you know, if the houses are too expensive to buy, but, you know, doesn't that also apply to the rental market at some point in time? You know, if it's more expensive to, you know, maybe both of them are out of the, you know, what happens then? What do we do with all of that rental property that nobody can afford to rent and the real property that nobody can afford to buy?
Well, it's interesting you bring up rental property. It's something that we were talking about in 2008, 2009 as a great place for people to invest because it provided constant cash flow. And we felt back then we would be looking at a situation where the next generation, the millennials, wouldn't be able to gather the income necessary to buy housing. And that's kind of where we are. The young group that we would normally see walking out there and, you know, even with FHA loans or with the new programs from Fannie and Freddie, getting loans at 3-4% down, they're just not doing it because they're looking at it and saying, look, I just can't afford it. And so they can make the monthly to rent, but they can't buy. And so that's what's driving this rental market just to dramatic heights, along with something that's interesting and people don't talk much about. Where else are you going to get that cash flow? Where are you going to get something that acts like fixed income? Because the Federal Reserve has put your interest basically to, you know, close to zero. And so people are saying, look, I have to go a little further afield. And doing this on the rental side, at least I get what feels to be, you know, 5-6% return on it.
And so, Rodney,
I don't know how far it goes. Go ahead, Chuck.
Oh, I was just going to, sorry to interrupt you. We got to take a hard break here because of our syndication. So we're taking a hard break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes and Rodney will finish his answer. Thank you.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management. We do investing simplified.
Hi, everybody. Chuck Price, the financial doctor here. If you're between ages 58 and 68, choosing Social Security benefits at the right time is one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You get one chance to get it right. After 12 months, there are no do-overs. 74% of Americans receive reduced benefits. Get your free report on 44 Social Security secrets at pfgwm.com. Social Security is often one of the largest and most mismanaged assets in your retirement income plan. Claiming benefits sounds easy. So is leaving up to $250,000 of your money with the government or reducing your benefits up to 76% over your life expectancy. For this vital information, go online to pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do investing simplified. We do investing simplified.
When you have questions about your health, you go to a doctor, right? But when it comes to your financial health, like what investments will give you the best return, why are you talking to your spouse's cousin Lou? You need Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Chuck Price knows investing is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's about what's best for your financial health. Sure, investing can be complex, but like your medical doctor, Chuck Price makes the complex simple, so you understand exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. Sign up for our free newsletter and see our free videos at AskTheFinancialDoctor.com or call 503-253-3000 and make an appointment for a free financial checkup. We'll give you the facts and our honest advice. Then make your own decision. Nothing against your spouse's cousin Lou, but we've been helping people for over 40 years.
We do investing simplified.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Call 503-253-3000.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Colson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Get your investing and estate planning questions answered now. You can email Chuck at askchuck@pfgwm.com. That's askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626.
Okay, we're back with Investing Simplified. We've got Rodney Johnson, who is senior editor of Dent Research, also an author of Irrational Economics. Rodney, welcome back. Thanks for taking the quick break here. And as you were talking about the rental properties.
Yeah, so we were talking about the fact people were kind of substituting rental properties for fixed income. And so it's really pushed the prices to dizzying heights. And so I think what we're going to see is some more housing start to be built a little bit, but it's going to take a long time to equalize the housing pressure in the United States, and it all stems back to the young set not having enough income to buy homes right now.
Well, doesn't it really just boil down to jobs? I mean, income is jobs. If you can't get jobs and you can't get decent paying jobs, you're not going to have the income.
Well, it does, Chuck. We do have a fair number of people working, and so it's not as if we have a lot of, you know, 27-year-old college graduates who don't have jobs. The unemployment rate for college graduates is around 4 or 4.5%. They're just not getting the raises that we did when we were younger, because frankly, there's too much demand for it. People are still willing to change jobs, and so we're just not seeing that flow down to the working person in terms of income, even though they're employed.
Well, I thought actually on the statistical numbers, I thought we have the highest number of the highest percentage of people not working that we've had in 37 years.
Oh, you are absolutely correct. When we look at the number of people who are participating in the labor force, and it's everybody over 16, it's kind of a weird thing to think about. But, you know, my wife's grandmother, who is almost 100, counts as a potential person in the labor force, even though she's 90-something. But in terms of the number of people who are participating who are over 16, we have the lowest rate since, I want to say, 1977. Now, a lot of that, you can say, is people who are older. You can say it's retirees. We have 10,000 boomers every day retiring. But, I mean, to be fair, we have a couple of million people, and between 2 and 5 million people in their 40s and 50s who have just checked out. And so that's the long-term unemployed who are not participating in the workforce that are really a struggle to get them back, because, as you know, as a planner, what's going to happen when they reach retirement age? If they're not working today, they certainly have nothing that they're going to retire on. And, of course, we as society are going to have to deal with that.
Well, yeah, and unfortunately, the society is going to have to not only deal with it, they're going to have to pay for it.
Well, yes, and you know, we were just talking about that in our office the other day, and talking about entitlements and Social Security and Medicare, and I've said for many years, they're going to change the programs, particularly Social Security. It will not be a retirement stipend, which is what it's always been. We all paid in, we all get back out. It will become welfare for the elderly. Because the minute you say, if you have more than X, you don't get it, you've changed it to a benefit based on wealth and income, which by definition is a form of welfare.
And that is going to happen. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt in anybody's mind that eventually one of these people running for president are going to, they've all shied away from it. I remember when Bush and Gore had that debate about the lockbox. Well, the funny thing is the lockbox didn't matter because there was no money there to lock up anyway. So the thing is, now we're at a point where somebody has to stand up and say, you know what, guys, enough is enough. We need to go in. We need to revamp this. Do it right now. And I don't care if they go back and say if you're 50 and below or whatever they do it, but you're exactly right. They're going to have to offset it by income. That's the only way it's going to survive.
And, you know, the only person who's approached this that I'm aware of is New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. He put out a position on this about 2 months ago. But as you might imagine, it is not a popular thing. And so when they put out a position statement, if it doesn't get a lot of popular play, they immediately stop talking about it because it's not helping them in the polls.
Well, the only way they could do it and survive, and this would be political suicide to a degree, but they would have to tie Social Security to the retirement plans of Congress and all the government employees. And I think if they did that and they tied Social Security to those two things, mm-hmm. it would be a little more palatable. And people would say, oh, well, you know what? That makes sense. These guys are retiring at $15,000 a month. Maybe we need to reevaluate what we're paying these guys.
Yeah, like you say, that's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen because I don't think anybody has the political guts to do it.
Right.
You know, maybe a guy like the Donald, who doesn't owe anybody any money, so he says, he's not taking any money, anybody to buy his votes. Maybe he would have the cojones to stand up and say, you know what, enough is enough. Let's make this thing work.
I think he would, but what scares me about Donald Trump is I think he would stand up and really say anything because he is that proverbial loose cannon on the deck. You know it's going to go off. You just don't know where it's going to be aiming when it happens.
Yeah, I think he's got a lot of charming. I mean, people are generally fed up with politicians. They lie out of both sides of their mouth. They're constantly lying, and now with Facebook and Twitter and everything on YouTube and everything, you can actually see these guys lie. I mean, it's pretty, yeah. You can go right on there, and they're not dummied up. I mean, you could just see them saying the opposite from what they do. And it's all of them. I mean, it's both political parties. The thing about Trump that scares me is you can't bully other countries. And the thing that worries me about the Donald, and I like a lot of his qualities because I want a straight shooter. I don't think we've had one in the office for a long, long time. And I admire his straight shooting. However, I don't want that guy being a loose cannon dealing with China and Russia.
Yeah, this is the exact conversation we had in our office. I said, I don't want him with his finger hovering over the button for nuclear missiles.
Oh, God,
that is
no.
Not something I want.
No. That's the one part about his persona that scares the heck out of me because I've got kids and I've got grandkids and great-grandkids coming. I want to see them have a future.
Well, the other thing, too, with Donald Trump is that you can't go into Washington, no matter with good intentions or bad, and alienate everybody in both parties all the time by your bluntness and expect to ever get anything done. I mean, they'll bury him in stuff. You know, he'll sit there and spin wheels and probably have a heart attack trying to get things done, but he won't be able to do it because he'll make everybody
it'll
mad.
It'll be 48 months of nothing.
Yeah.
Because everybody inside the Beltway knows they could outlast him.
Hey, you know, that's kind of amazing because we've kind of had that. That's what we've been doing for the last 6 years. Nothing. Everything's gotten worse. We've done nothing for 6 years, basically.
Well, I think it's even more than six, don't you think? I mean, it seems like it goes back for a long ways.
It's been a long time, and I don't know, but he everything he talks about financially and economically, I buy. However, the part I have a problem with is his temperament.
Mm, Dr. Strangelove.
So, yeah. Well, that goes back a little bit, doesn't it, Rodney?
Boy, it does.
Yeah. But, I think Donald Trump is a loose cannon, and it scares the heck out of me. Well, listen, are you guys pretty much all set? I got my agenda for the meeting in September. I think you're sold out completely, aren't you?
I think we are, and we are set. We had a couple of shifts there at the end. We were able to get John Kilduff, who is an oil expert. He joined us actually back in 2008 at a conference when oil was at $140 that summer as it was starting to trail off. And so we're pretty excited to have him back with everything going on right now in the oil industry. And so I think we're going to have a lot of good speakers, a lot of great information for our attendees.
Well, and I also have been encouraging people, if they sign up for your free newsletter, and I believe also they I am a network member and have been for quite a while, but I also talked to Lance because I know you guys also sell the program on CDs, and people can buy those and listen to the program if they can't attend.
Oh, exactly. And people can stream them. They can, you know, put them on CD or, you know, memory stick, whatever works for them in terms of getting the information where they can listen to it in their car or while they work out or just sitting at their computer. And so absolutely, if they can't attend, which, like you say, I think it's sold out now, they'll at least have access to all this. And then they can kind of pick and choose the pieces that they listen to on their own time.
Now, do you have to be a network member, though, to be able to do that, or is that available to anybody?
I think it's available to anybody. I assume as a network member, of course, you have access to so many things. It's probably much cheaper for you, but I believe it's available to anyone.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty reasonable. And I have encouraged people to go to my website that's linked to yours that they can go on there and get information on. In fact, I had a client call me, and I called Lance and talked to him about it for that guy to get hooked up on it, because I think if you're an individual investor and you're investing your own money and you're investing some money into the market, you cannot afford to not listen to this economic summit. You just can't do it.
But and that's just it. I mean, we try to bring people who have very unvarnished opinions and point of view, and so there's nothing politically correct about what we do. And so people are going to get exactly what we think, exactly what we're seeing in our research, and they're going to be able to ask questions and, you know, kind of get a handle on these things that are affecting their financial lives.
Well, you know, Rodney, I think you said a magic word there. I think political correct and Harry Dent are like 180 degrees apart. I don't think Harry gives a damn about it.
It's not something we worry much about.
No. Something that just kind of goes right by him, and I think he could care less. Well, listen, do you guys have another question or anything? Okay, the other thing I will ask you, you know, Harry was saying some time ago he thought the price of oil was going to continue down.
Right.
And a lot of people thought, I mean, I heard a lot of the networks when I heard him say this, saying he was crazy. But boy, is he ever coming out to be exactly right.
Ray, we were looking, when the price dropped into the 50s and then got into the 40s, we thought it would go back up, you know, near 60 and then come down again, which it did. Right now, it may have another leg up. It may go back, you know, to the mid to upper 40s before it drops again. But we think it's going to drop into the 30s before all this ends. And it's the same old thing, Chuck. We have a lot of supply, and we have very, you know, modest growth in demand. It is growing, but very, very slowly compared to the supply side. And when you bring on somebody like Iran, are they really going to flood the market with oil? I don't know. But the price of oil in the short term is a perception game. And so it doesn't have to be that they go dump a bunch of oil. It has to be that people think it's coming, and you'll see that price get pushed down pretty dramatically. John Kilduff, who's coming to the conference, thinks it could go into the 20s before it's over. Of course, that'd be an overshoot.
Wow. I'm looking forward. Hey, listen, I will see you next month. And I'm looking forward to the economic summit. We'll have I'll be calling in the station and talking to the guys and giving a little report of what's going on, and maybe grab you and have you give a little comment.
Sounds great, Chuck. Look
okay.
Forward to seeing you.
Thanks, Rodney. You bet. Well, we'll be right back with Investing Simplified.
Often do you have a checkup? Annually? Only when you're not feeling your best? Or are you one who waits until there is an emergency condition? High blood pressure, rapid pulse, or sleepless nights could be the result of your investment portfolio or no estate plan. But there is a specialist ready to offer you a checkup on your financial health.
Hey, Gene, Dr. Price.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor and author of Investing Simplified, is offering you a free financial checkup. Whether you're asking for a second opinion, a complete financial physical, or investment stress test, Chuck Price, the financial doctor, can help diagnose your money ailments and prescribe a prudent path towards healthy investments and peace of mind. Call 503-253-3000 to schedule your financial checkup or on the web at pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. You'll feel better.
We do investing simplified.
Hi, everybody. Chuck Price, the financial doctor here. If you're between ages 58 and 68, choosing Social Security benefits at the right time is one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You get one chance to get it right. After 12 months, there are no do-overs. 74% of Americans receive reduced benefits. Get your free report on 44 Social Security secrets at pfgwm.com. Social Security is often one of the largest and most mismanaged assets in your retirement income plan. Claiming benefits sounds easy. So is leaving up to $250,000 of your money with the government, or reducing your benefits up to 76% over your life expectancy. For this vital information, go online to pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do investing simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future, and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com. 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker & Coulson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and it's always good to hear Rodney and his opinion. I think next time I get him and well, I know where Harry stands with his own personal investing and what he's done. I don't think Harry even owns a home right now.
No, he's been renting for some time.
Yeah, and I'd like to find out.
Which kind of goes along with what they said.
Yeah, and I'd like to find out, you know, what Rodney's actually doing personally too, you know, and so maybe next time we'll ask him that.
Well, I can tell you that I think the key thing is they're looking at long time. If you're going to buy the home, you're going to live in the rest of your life. Then, you know, that's where Rodney's at because he's still got kids in school and stuff, and Harry doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a little difference in age there and what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, today on the Tax Investigator, we're just going to talk about one topic. We were going to talk about it last week, but we got callers in, which is always great. So if you have a call, if you have a comment, if you have a question, 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. We'd love to have you call in, and especially when Rodney or Harry's on, give us a call if you've got a question for him. Very specific answers. It's a great time to ask him a question. Well, today on the Tax Investigator, we're going to talk about an IRA transaction that went to court, and a couple interesting points came out of that. One is how to get smoked by the IRS. That is point number one, what not to do. And then point number two is that this court decision actually established a very aggressive tactic and gave it additional credence that, if done properly, could be beneficial if your circumstances fit it correctly and if you do it correctly and get the proper advice. You'll notice this poor taxpayer actually did go to a high-powered I believe it was an attorney firm. Yeah, and the accountants wouldn't have made that mistake, but I think this attorney firm made the bad advice.
Ooh, ouch, ouch.
So, basically, this is the case of a taxpayer who had worked for a company for a long time, had accrued, put a lot of money into his 401k. So he had, we'll say, about $320,000 in his 401k, and he wanted to cut out on his own on some private business ventures. But he needed capital for these business ventures, and so he had the IRA purchase the shares in the partnership that he set up.
Of course, he did.
That's exactly right.
Of course.
And just to give a little background, there's certain problems with IRAs. You cannot do what's called self-dealing. It's considered a prohibited transaction. You can now don't confuse that with a self-directed IRA. That's where you just have a brokerage platform, say with Schwab or something, and you're choosing which mutual fund or stock to buy. That's self-directed. This would be self-dealing, which is transactions with a related party. And we won't go into those definitions, but it can be a company or a person, so on and so forth, to the nth degree. So what this fella did was he purchased the membership shares of a partnership that he started. And this case went to court. The IRS came back and said, no, you have a prohibited transaction. So the $320,000 that you put into this partnership in exchange for the membership shares, we're going to say that that's a complete liquidation of your IRA. It's number one, it would be fully taxable income taxes along with his other income. So I'm assuming he's just about in the top tax bracket. Number two, he was under 59 and a half, so it's subject to the 10% penalty. And number three, it qualified for substantial underreporting of income, and an additional 20% penalty got tacked on. And so he went to court to say, I think I need to fight this, because we're talking, I don't know, 50 plus percent.
Now, did he get some professional advice before he went on a tangent to do this?
Yes, he did. As I said before, very specifically, it was a legal firm.
That could be an E&O claim.
I wonder.
Yeah.
It was not mine.
No, of course not. But when you mess with fire, you better count on getting burned.
That's very true. And so there were three points that were addressed in this court case. The first point was the IRA's acquisition of this business a prohibited transaction? Point number two, was his business's paying him a salary a prohibited transaction? And point number three, was his business entering into a lease agreement with another related party a prohibited transaction? So they looked at all three of these. And what's interesting is the first point, the acquisition of the business by the IRA, not a prohibited transaction, and that was upheld. That point was thrown out, and so that is okay to do, and I've seen it done successfully in other scenarios and can be beneficial. But as you and I have talked before, Chuck, you really want to be specific. When your IRA starts owning things other than stock and mutual funds, when you're getting into real estate and business shares, you have to value that every year. And so this, you have to know what you're doing.
And you also got to be able to, at 70 and a half, be able to break it out so you can distribute it.
Very true. Required minimum distribution. So that was upheld. The thing that bit him was the other two transactions. He took a salary from the business, and that was considered self-dealing, a prohibited transaction. The whole thing, and the lease agreement also was upheld as a prohibited transaction. And so he made an interesting argument, though. He regarding the salary, he countered, and his argument in court was that it wasn't a prohibited transaction because the salary he received didn't come from the IRA assets, but rather came from income from the business that the business generated. Didn't stand up. Commingled the funds in the business, didn't stand up. He lost, and that was a rather creative argument. But such is the case of poor Mr. Ellis, and I'm assuming we're well over 50% tax bill on this $320K.
You know, it's interesting. I've heard of various variations of the same theme, and in fact, I think that there are some companies and or firms that sort of specialize in use your IRA for this, that, or the other thing. And I had somebody come to me with that one time about and I think it had to do with real property and stuff like that. And I said, you know, this is a tax question that's way out of my league. But I said, you need to go find the best tax advice you can possibly get on this, because I'm not going to give you any on this one. This one I'm not doing.
I had a client come to me that wanted to do this with their, and I told them that they better get it checked out and they better get it signed off by a CPA or somebody who is a tax person, not the person selling the product to them or the services, because someday you're going to be in front of the IRS and you're going to have to justify what you did is correct or incorrect.
And
you better be right.
And even if something is gray and you have a reasonable basis and stuff, do you want to be the guinea pig that goes to court to settle this or to explain your position? So that's the tax investigator for today.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and come right back with Carl's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Pick up the phone, give us a call, 503-417-7626, toll free 990-0750, and that's 800, of course. We'll be right back.
Say goodnight to me.
Simplified. When you have questions about your health, you go to a doctor, right? But when it comes to your financial health, like what investments will give you the best return, why are you talking to your spouse's cousin Lou? You need Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Chuck Price knows investing is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's about what's best for your financial health. Sure, investing can be complex, but like your medical doctor, Chuck Price makes the complex simple, so you understand exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. Sign up for our free newsletter and see our free videos at askthefinancialdoctor.com or call 503-253-3000 and make an appointment for a free financial checkup. We'll give you the facts and our honest advice. Then make your own decision. Nothing against your spouse's cousin Lou, but we've been helping people for over 40 years.
We do Investing Simplified.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Call 503-253-3000.
We do Investing Simplified.
Hi, everybody. Chuck Price, the financial doctor here. If you're between ages 58 and 68, choosing Social Security benefits at the right time is one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You get one chance to get it right. After 12 months, there are no do-overs. 74% of Americans receive reduced benefits. Get your free report on 44 Social Security secrets at pfgwm.com. Social Security is often one of the largest and most mismanaged assets in your retirement income plan. Claiming benefits sounds easy, so is leaving up to $250,000 of your money with the government, or reducing your benefits up to 76% over your life expectancy. For this vital information, go online to pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do Investing Simplified.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
All right, send lawyers just guns and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepsen with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and it's time for Carl's comments. And consistent with today's kind of theme, I have a topic today that I call limitations of limited liability companies, that's LLCs, in holding real estate. And this is a thing that comes up. It's an estate planning kind of issue, too, to a certain extent. But it's very common that people own rental properties in limited liability companies. And there are some pros and cons to this. But I wanted to just touch base on a couple of the limitations, not to discourage anybody from doing it, because there are some good reasons for holding real estate in a limited liability company. So you might want to, first of all, talk about what is a limited liability company. And a limited liability company is sort of a cross between a partnership and a corporation. But as a practical matter, what it affords the major benefit of a limited liability company is that the owners of the company, the members, the equivalent of the shareholders in a corporation in the limited liability company, have what's called limited liability, meaning that as a general rule, they are not personally liable for the debts of the corporation or the limited liability company. Now, that's the main reason that people do it. The limited liability members, the owners of the limited liability company, are limited to the value of their capital contribution is the only thing that could be exposed. In other words, if you have a limited liability company and it owns a house and the house is rented, and unfortunately it gets rented to the tenant from hell, and somehow your insurance has lapsed, and, you know, the tenant from hell does something really bizarre, and anyway, ends up with a judgment against you, against the limited liability company, for $1 million over your insurance limit, then the limited liability, that person can only get what's in your limited liability company. He can only get the house that you put into the limited liability company, unless you did something that made that, you know, an illegal transaction. It's very rare that you pierce the corporate veil or get past the corporate shield or the limited liability aspect of a limited liability company. It's possible, but it usually has to do with gutting the company. Say, for example, you put the house into the company, and then, you know, you basically took all of the assets and everything out of it other than the house too, I guess. It's pretty hard to do. It's pretty hard to gut the limited liability company to the point where you get tagged individually. But that's what they do. So one of the things that is misunderstood about a limited liability company is, though, a lot of people think, well, if I put all of my stuff in a limited liability company, then I'm free from creditors. Well, no, you're not, because what happens is, in a different scenario, say you have a bunch of limited liability companies and you're driving your pickup truck and you're driving down the road and you're texting and, you know, you've had a couple of drinks and the little lights on the crosswalk go up and a lady with her baby carriage and triplets go across the thing and you smack them. Well, guess what? Your insurance probably isn't going to cover that. And your insurance then gets run out and there's a judgment against you for $8 gazillion because you just, you know, whacked up a bunch of kids and stuff. And so you've got a real problem. And you say, well, that's okay, I got LLCs. Well, no, that's not okay, because what they do is they just get your membership interest in the LLCs, just like they could get your shares of stock in a corporation, and they end up owning what you own. So it might take a few hoops for them to go through it, but you end up with a real problem. So the limited liability of all of those things has to do with the liabilities of the corporation, not the liabilities of the owner of the corporation, mainly the shareholder or the owner of the limited liability company, the members. So that's one of the big limitations that people forget about. There are some other limitations that I'd give some thought to. One is that you have to register your limited liability company just like you do a corporation. So there's an expense to that, and it's annualized because they have a renewal fee. So there's an annual renewal fee. It's about $100 a year, but that, you know, mounts up there. With respect to real estate, when you put a real property into an LLC, the possibility is, and I think it's probably a probability, is that you're going to end up with a higher insurance bill because you have to go to a commercial rate. However, that usually gives you a little better coverage, but nonetheless, you're going to pay a little bit more on your insurance. Here's an issue that not everybody thinks about. There is a possible trigger when you transfer property into a limited liability company that it might trigger the lender's due-on-sale clause. If your property is mortgaged and you have a loan and you just willy-nilly transfer it to the limited liability company, technically that's a violation of the loan documents, which says thou shalt not assign or convey any interest in the property without first obtaining the written consent of the lender. And it doesn't really say thou shalt not, but says something
pretty close.
Like, yeah, pretty close. Anyway, yeah. That's the King James version of the membership.
Okay, you know,
anyway.
Yeah, that's where I tell you the truth.
Yeah. Anyway, that rarely happens to my knowledge. I almost never seen that happen. The alternative, so many people just do it anyway because they're not really worried about it.
Carl, also, and we'll kind of bring Kevin in here. If you have a limited liability corporation, don't you have to also file an annual tax report?
That's limitation number 6.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
That is exactly right. With the lender, the other alternative, if you're really conservative about things and you really want to do it, you go to your lender and you say, "Can I do this?" And they'll usually say yes, but some of them will charge you a fairly significant fee. $500-$700 to redo the loan documents to include the LLC as a borrower on the loan. So that, and if there are multiple, you know, properties, that could be expensive. So you have to kind of weigh and balance those things. So then also there is a tax preparation issue that comes up that is going to cost you a little bit more to do. But in many cases, I think that the actual limited liability stuff can make a difference for you. So, I mean, I think it may make it well worth it. And it's not that big of a deal because usually, unless you're treated as a corporation, a C corporation, which you can be if you want to, but ordinarily you're treated as either an individual or as a partnership. And Kevin has to, or his colleagues have to prepare, you know, like a K-1 that goes to your own individual partnership tax return. So it's not like a separate tax return that gets filed for the company, but it's one that gets filed with your individual return. And there's some extra work to do that. Am I fairly correct on that?
That was very good.
Okay, good.
Well stated.
Good.
And if you mess up on all that, the federal government will provide you with a uniform and a cell.
They will, yeah, and four, two hots.
And three squares a day.
Yeah. Three squares. So, and then finally, the other thing is that there's really no substitute for good insurance. Just because you have an LLC doesn't mean that you can just say, okay, I'm not going to insure the property, because that would be crazy. And insurance is, from the standpoint of asset protection, is probably your greatest you know, tool. And anybody who says you ought not to have good insurance on the properties that you have, whether it's in the name of the LLC or not, that's a bad thing. You don't want to do that, because you never know what's going to happen, particularly in the liability side. We've seen, our firm does a lot of landlord work, and we've seen some pretty darn crazy claims by you know, like I said, there are lots of tenants from hell out there. They might not even know it, but they're out there. So anyway, that's Carl's comments. It's still a good tool. You know, maybe we'll talk about the benefits of the LLC, but I think that there are some definite benefits, and it's not a bad thing at all for some people.
Well, you know, this brings up a good point, because next Saturday I'm going to talk to you about investing, and I'm going to compare annuities and investing, and I'm going to talk to you about when investing for free isn't free. And I just want to make this point. If you believe you can invest for free, you better check yourself at the door. I'll be happy to take calls on this. You can call next week to the show. I'm going to talk about what isn't free when people tell you something's free. And I will explain to you the actual cost you're really paying. Even though you don't see it on the statement, it's there. If you think you can go buy a new car for free, you are sorely mistaken. It doesn't happen, or a home, or anything else. Everybody has to get paid. So, Kevin, how does somebody get a hold of you?
503-666-5569, and we're at baker-colson.com.
And Carl?
warrenallen.com and 503-255-8795.
Okay, we're at pfgwm.com. We're located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103 in Portland, Oregon. And you can reach us at 503-253-3000 or toll-free 877-50-PRICE. And don't forget to check out AskTheFinancialDoctor.com. There's a lot of good information for anybody 58 to 68 that hasn't filed your Social Security. You need to check that seminar on demand. We'll be back next week.
Price Financial Group, wealth management. Price Financial Group, wealth management.